one race into the triple header, and you're listening to the Forecast F1 podcast. Sam, tell me what you saw today.
What did I see? I saw a great race. I saw lots of overtakes, and I think overall a pretty interesting weekend. And I guess we should also mention the fact that we have a guest with us this weekend. Joining with us is David once again. David, welcome back to the podcast. We're so glad to have you.
Hi, Sam. Hi, Anton. Thank you for having me again. It was a great race. I didn't have too much hope, like before quali, but ended up being a great, awesome race from Saturday until today.
Not too much hope on the race or on your predictions.
Come on, hit too low. It's too early to hit too low, man.
Yeah, it was a bit early. I agree.
Come on, people will
Sorry
know.
About
people
that.
Will eventually know what happened.
Yeah, we will get to that. I agree. Actually, it was quite a good race. It was nice to get a relevant comparison between the Red Bull and the McLaren on a, let's say, relatively straightforward track. And turned out to be quite close if we look at it. But let's start on the Saturday, or perhaps let's even start on the Friday and the Saturday with the
Maybe.
Training sessions.
Yeah.
We already had a couple of drivers who were nudging and budging with each other. We had Stroll and Hamilton, and we had a bit of an incident between Leclerc and Norris. What did you make of that, Sam?
I think I was most surprised about the fact that there wasn't any potential penalties or grid penalties handed down on those reactions between Stroll and Leclerc, because, I mean, they both inadvertently, knocked or tried to do things that typically, if you were looking at that in a race or even in other cases of a free practice, you would normally consider some sort of a penalty. So I was actually surprised that there wasn't anything that was determined from it. But it also was uncharacteristic, I think, especially from Leclerc, to see him react the way that he did. What were both of your thoughts?
Well, for me, it was really weird what happened with Stroll and Hamilton. But yeah, from what you're saying, it was really out of character from Leclerc. I've never seen him. I don't remember seeing a reaction from him like that. I don't know if it's the pressure or something maybe inside the team, but that was really weird. And I was expecting some penalty for both of them, but it wasn't the case.
It's interesting because, yeah, usually you don't see penalties handed out for incidents on practice sessions, but I think this did warrant. So I was also slightly surprised, but on the other hand, that did make qualifying even more interesting, because you knew. Yeah, I don't know. I always, when I go into a qualifying session and you know that somebody's going to have a grid penalty beforehand, it doesn't happen too often. But actually, we did have it this weekend too with Perez, as we knew he would have a 3-place grid penalty because of driving with that. With that rear wing hanging loose in Canada. So, you know, when you go into a quali session, you know somebody's going to have a grip penalty. That sort of takes away a little bit of the excitement. So, after all, I guess if somebody deserves a penalty, they deserve one. But it was nice to go into a clean qualifying session and not see any grip penalties. Although, actually, on the qualifying session, we did get grip penalties for Sargeant because he was impeding, but I guess it's not really something that matters too much. I don't know if we want to spill too many words on Sargeant this weekend, but let's talk about the more interesting part of qualifying, which I guess after all was Q3, where actually this time compared to last race, we had all the major teams plus the Alpines. I mean, in Canada, we didn't see Perez and we didn't see the two Ferraris in Q3. This time we did, which made it exciting. And it led to quite the climax, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, seeing Norris at the very end be able to capture that pole was very exciting and well-deserved. I mean, this is, you're seeing, again, a resurgence of the McLarens this year. And I really firmly believe at this point that they are one of the strongest teams on the grid at this current moment. They have, in my opinion, probably the strongest driver team pairings. And then to see the car and to see the consistency that it's delivering, and then the fact that Lando's now in this category where, I mean, obviously we'll touch on the race and the speed that he had and the way he was able to shorten the gap, but just securing pole, I mean, we typically wouldn't have seen that before. So it's really exciting. I think no matter what, over the past several races, what we have seen is the margin of competitiveness become that much closer, and including Mercedes. I think that Mercedes had a really great weekend as well, and with qualifying specifically in Q3, yeah, seeing Lewis do well once again was also nice.
Well, in talking about McLaren, they've been on the way up from last year, from maybe after the break from last year until now, the second best team overall. You know, I agree 100% that they are the better driver pairing, and probably I'm sorry, it has to do with this. There's no like a competition between the drivers. They kind of know their place in the team. Oscar, of course, know that Lando is number one inside the team, but that doesn't take away the fact that he can compete during races or during qualifying. This wasn't the case, of course, because he had such a terrible outing in Q3. But of course, Lando took the opportunity, and he had the car during the whole weekend that he had the car to compete on top with Max.
I would argue that by now Perez actually also knows his place in the team, but regardless, no, I get what you said. I get what you're saying, and that's a good point. And the McLarens actually seem to work together quite well. Like you said, we'll talk about the race in a bit, where you see that actually the Ferraris had a bit of struggling. Well, the two coming together a little bit, and you don't really see that with McLaren. So you're right; that's a good point. But it does need to be mentioned that Piastri didn't have the best of Q3 sessions, with his first lap time being deleted for being with four wheels over the white lines, I think, on turn 10. And then later in his second run, he sort of slid off the track and went into the gravel. So after all, he wasn't able to set a competitive time, or not a single time at all. So he finished P10. He would start P9 because Perez, finishing P8 in that qualifying session, had that three-place grid penalty. So starting 11th, which meant that Alonso started in the top 10. Anyway, altogether, quite an interesting qualifying session. And I agree, Sam, with Norris there on pole. That set out for a very interesting Sunday, which I guess we can move into now, unless you have anything else from qualifying that has to be mentioned. If you don't, do tell me what you thought of the start of the race today, because I thought it was very, very nice and very exciting.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I would just recap that we just touched very lightly on is just I think it's a very successful qualifying for Alpine. The fact that both drivers managed to crack into the top 10, because, I mean, a team that has had a very, very challenging year so far, and including the end of last year. And this is the first weekend, I believe, this entire year where we have managed to see both drivers manage to get into Q3. So I think that's a very positive result for them, and a hopeful one in the future for the rest of the season.
True.
Well, I think that's a fair takeaway. You know, seeing both Alpine on Q3, it was amazing for competition, of course. But also I need to say that there was some kind of, I don't know, like a flip over with the Alpines being on Q3. And I know I'm a fan, but the Red Bulls, not the Red Bulls, how the V carbs going out in Q1.
Right.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting because they have been doing quite well. They've been doing quite well for the past, I don't know. I think for the not at the beginning of the season, but for the past few races, you know, they've always been up there, and VCarp seemed to be that team that was clinging on to be sort of switching with Aston Martin, even, you know, who were struggling also this weekend, already starting with qualifying. But yeah, the VCarps have been quite good, and then now they started to this weekend was not a good weekend for them, and instead at least Alpine was able to take advantage of that. So that was exciting, because you're right. I mean, if you look at it, this was not the only last race in Canada. They also, wasn't it the same finishing positions actually for the race with Gasly P9 and Ocon P10, which repeated itself today. So that's interesting. But both cars making it into Q3, that was, I think it's a good sign for them.
Right. Do we want to transition then into the race and get into the meat and bones of what made this today quite exciting?
I think it's a good idea. When the lights went out, David, what did you observe?
Well, after of course the lights went out in the race, I was hoping for a battle between Max and Lando, but it was really surprising to see Russell taking top out in right before turn one. It was an amazing move, by the way. I don't know if you, I guess that you guys saw it detail. Like he came behind Norris and then behind Verstappen and then overtook the Ferrari from Sainz and went out in, he went in the outside of turn one. It was simply amazing. It shows the quality of Russell, of course.
Yeah. It was well-timed, well-executed. I mean, in the very beginning, of course, there's so much happening and you're trying to look at where everybody is and who's going to make a move. And at first, I was like, is that Hamilton? And then once I saw the blue helmet and I realized as he made it past everybody that it was Russell, I was very surprised. And seeing the replay, I mean, it was a gamble, but it paid off very well, and he was able to capitalize on that struggle. Unfortunately for Lando in that moment, he was squeezed. And I mean, this, I know that he had mentioned at the end of the race that he felt that the potential for him to actually have more of a fighting chance with Max for the win rested upon that start. I would actually think that it was maybe a few factors that would have varied that. But I mean, in the very beginning, for him, that was, he really didn't have any options there once he was squeezed, and yeah, Russell took advantage of that. I thought that was a brilliant move.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's a good point. I think there's other reasons to contribute for Norris not winning this race. One of them being that he just continued far too long on that first stint. But you're right. That start,
right.
That race until the first corner was definitely part of it. And if Russell wouldn't have been on that outside corner, he probably would have been able to break a little bit later and perhaps be able to fend off Verstappen a little bit more easy. It's difficult to tell. And you're right. I mean, it was a very good move from Russell. It really was. And he really benefited. It was really that you know, the third dog running away with it. I mean, Norris just didn't have a very good start, which was unfortunate. With only the second pole of his career, yeah, I understand there's a bit of pressure on it too. But yeah, and then, I do think that he still would have had a chance. I really don't understand why he vetoed continuing on that soft tire for so long. I think he probably lost quite a bit of time with that. No, didn't he?
I guess he saw that he could manage better, but the difference in two laps from those soft tires and the conditions that they were, I guess that wasn't going to be a lot of difference till the end of the race. Of course, it ended like in sub 3 seconds difference with Max, but yeah, that I guess that wasn't the factor. I mean, if he could have followed him before in the pit stop, I mean, it could have been a much, much close fight. I don't know if he could have beaten, but it had been a much closer fight. And Also, just to add to the beginning of the race, I'm looking at it right now, and kind of, I don't know. Maybe if he could have kept his lane and not go into Max, maybe he wouldn't have left the space for Russell, and he could have kept that P1.
Yeah, true. No, it was, but in the end, I guess that comes with the pressure of having a pole position, having to fend off, and then it's also, this track here in Barcelona has a very long distance until that first corner. So if it would have been at a different track, perhaps things would have been different. But we'll, yeah, I mean, that's I guess that's just what it is. In those first laps, actually, we had a couple of other, I don't want to call them incidents, but we had contact between the two Ferraris, or we had a fight between the two Ferraris. If there really was I didn't really see if there was any like forceful contact, but in the end, Sainz went off track because he was forced off track by Leclerc. They were complaining on one another on the radio. They were complaining about one another after the race as well. What did you make of that, Sam?
It's unfortunate to see because the team itself, it seems like with Ferrari, when they're on, and when they have issues, they really have it really just kind of goes south. And I think there were a few things overall that made me scratch my head a bit when it comes to strategy or when it comes to the team dynamic as a whole over the race. For one, Leclerc, similarly to Norris, was left out there before he actually pitted at last minute. I don't think
Even
that that
longer
was
than
maybe
Norris,
a wise
yeah.
decision. Even longer, yeah, like I think it was one more lap, and I was
Right.
really wondering what the strategy was behind something like that. I know that he had expressed his frustration on the radio of like, why are we doing, I mean, they always use plan A, B, C, G, F, all the
A1,
but for
A2.
him, he was frustrated. Exactly. And on the radio he'd express like, why are we doing plan A? Now, whatever plan A is, but there just seems to be a struggle, at least with this weekend, when it comes to the dynamic and the communication as a whole, whether it's through team radio, whether it is with the drivers themselves. Something is going on. I don't know what it is. It could be a variety of issues. I mean, last race weekend in Canada wasn't great for both drivers, weren't able to even obtain points. So now we're transitioning into a race which also was Sainz's home race. So I do think that, he was very vocal on the radio, not just with Leclerc and his contact with him, but
Also with
also with
Hamilton, huh?
other drivers as well.
Yeah.
Also with Hamilton, and he was very surprised that there wasn't any decision, which ultimately I thought that was a racing incident, but I
Yeah, so
digress.
did
I
I.
think that, yeah, I think that ultimately he was more maybe, I mean, Sainz is in a very, he's in a very challenging position at this point in time. He's in a situation where he hasn't signed for next year. There's a lot of pressure at this point, obviously. I'm sure that there's a lot that weighs on his mind being in a situation where he doesn't have a solid team as of yet to determine his fate and his future. He's sitting in Ferrari in the last bit of a team that he obviously wanted to be a part of. Now he has issues with the team dynamic, and then he's also at his home race, and there is the pressure of trying to perform for the fans and for your home. So I think there was a lot of moving parts this weekend involving the team. I really hope that moving forward next week, that maybe things are going to be a little bit more positive. But if anything, I mean, the start of seeing Leclerc, like we had gone back when it came to free practice and an uncharacteristic reaction that he had. I mean, maybe that was actually foreshadowing what was already to be and ultimately had the result that it did between the drivers. We don't know, but I think that it wasn't really a satisfying weekend, unfortunately, overall.
I want to take that moment that you mentioned there between Sainz and Hamilton. We seem to agree on it, but David, what did you think?
Well, I want to say that maybe Ferrari found out that they were going to be competing on top really early in the race. I want to say that really early in the race. Maybe it was really early in the weekend when they find out that they weren't on the same pace as the McLaren or the Mercedes. But they had to try something, you know, because of course the home race for Carlos, the pressure that maybe Charles is feeling because the way the team is going. But yeah, I mean, they had to risk something at some point, and it didn't come out well for any of them. I mean, that's the best result that they can, the finish that they had, the best result that they could get this weekend, bearing something really strange.
And I mean, since we're on the topic of maybe more of a frustrating weekend for teams, what about Williams? I mean, we've talked about the Racing Bulls and obviously they didn't have a great weekend. But Williams as well. I mean, Albon was clearly having some sort of technical issues within the car. He had expressed that frustration. And we actually have seen him drop in the driver's standings as a result of unfortunately some situations that have transpired and results that he has had. I mean, it's unusual to see him finishing in 18th. And even throughout the entire race, it just didn't seem like there was any pace there. What was your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm actually looking at it now because I was only looking at the top part of the standings and seeing that Norris overtook Leclerc. But you're right, Ocon was scoring his point. Now has 3 points and Albon has two. So yeah, he was overtaken. Yeah, you're right. Williams had a bad weekend overall, and they've been having a bad season overall, I would say. Worse than they had last year when I would sometimes pick Albon for P10. Now I don't, so that says something, I guess. And yeah, from the bottom teams, of course they do have more points than, for example, Sauber. But you know, even Joe looked quite decent for most of this race. I thought he would have had a chance to score points, just as Hülkenberg. In the end, both didn't. But yeah, Williams. I was gonna say Sargeant, but Williams seemed to have a difficult time. And you were saying Sainz, you were mentioning him not having a solid seed for next year. I guess we're all hearing the rumors that he might go to Williams. But yeah, looking at their performance, it's not really something. I guess with the driver, the stature of Sainz, I think we all would have our doubts whether that would be the team that he should. That he should go to. But yeah, in the end, Williams had a tough race. Sauber didn't score any points. Then Haas also, I didn't check, but did Magnussen get any penalty points on his license actually for that? Do you get points on your license for a false start? Because he got 5 second penalty for that, and he's very close to having to skip a race.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question. I'm not certain if he did lose any point or have any points that were deducted, but he did get the 5 second penalty. Actually, Yuki also got a 5 second
Suffer.
penalty as well.
Suffer. It's
But, I mean,
the
Yuki got
second
it for
time this
speeding in the
season
pit
that he
lane, didn't
does
he?
it.
Yes, he
The
did.
second time
Yes,
that
he
he
did.
does it. And it's the second time that happened. I can't remember what was the race that wasn't going very well. It was this, maybe the same situation. And that doesn't show very.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the FIA documents now, and it does mention the time penalty for Magnussen, but it doesn't mention any points on his license. So
Yeah.
he seems to get away with
I
that.
mean, it could have been a bigger fuss if he was going to be points penalized and was going to miss the next race. So I guess that didn't happen.
But yeah, like you mentioned, Tsunoda speeding in the pit lane. There were some other pit lane. I mean, there were a couple of slow pit stops that we saw. We saw an early slow pit stop of Russell.
Right.
Also Norris. Actually, it was interesting because, you know, like we were talking about previously, Norris stayed out for a little bit longer. He then had the on-track battle with Russell in lap 35, which was an amazing battle. It lasted for about the whole lap. And then when he finally overtook Russell, he was about 9 seconds away from Verstappen and was closing the gap. then Verstappen pitted, and then later Norris pitted, and again he would have an 8-second gap that he was closing down towards the end of the race, which I guess was what we were all hoping, that either the race lasted 10 laps longer or Norris would gain a little bit more in those last laps to at least get an actual on-track fight between the two of them, which we didn't get, unfortunately. And we already discussed it, I guess. In the end, Norris didn't lose the race on those last laps. He lost it at the beginning of the race, but still, that caused for some excitement. I mean, in the end, we've seen a lot of races last year where Verstappen, if there was no safety car, he would finish a race with a lead of 20 or 25 or 30 seconds. That doesn't really seem to happen anymore, and we I don't know if you listened to the interviews after the race, but Norris was also saying that he definitely thought that that they had the fastest car today, which is interesting. You know, you get drivers actually these days that openly claim that they think they had the fastest car. I think in a lot of sports, usually people seem to downplay their capabilities just to prove how good of a day they had, but actually you see drivers recently claiming they had the fastest car but didn't win the race. It's quite an interesting talking point for me.
Yeah, I would say though that it is really exciting to see the fact that how quickly the McLarens are and how quickly Lando was able to kind of eat up that time. And we saw a similar stint back in Canada where he was trying to eat into the time as well. I think that, you know, if there was certain circumstances that didn't happen, yeah, we could be talking about a different outcome, or we could be talking about, you know, some really nice battles between him and Max. I think that we're going to see that in the future, and it's going to make it quite exciting. I mean, we also have a really positive result for Lewis, the fact that he's finished for the first time this year on the podium, which, speaking of uncharacteristic, it's obviously highly unusual to see Lewis Hamilton not on the podium at least once in a calendar year, at least at this point. So he was able to make it onto the podium, which is a fantastic result for him, especially with the situation that he encountered in Canada. You know, I think that I know that it's been quite a talking point amongst many people, but I don't think that he had a terrible race. I don't think he had a terrible weekend in Canada. I think that we actually saw a much more positive result than we've seen overall throughout the entire season with Mercedes up to this point. And I think that, you know, with that, it was actually looking down the rest of the season with maybe some renewed sense of optimism for both drivers. And so, yeah, to see Hamilton manage to get third on the podium, and also I think that he had some really tight battles, and he made some really bold moves when it came to a few of his overtakes, which was exciting to see as well. So it was nice to see him put his elbows out, make well-timed executions in that regard. And there was also Russell, who managed to finish as well in a decent spot. So I think that there's definitely some, on positive notes, positivity to take out of the Mercedes garage this weekend. And regardless of McLaren, or I would say Lando specifically, finishing in second, I think that this is still a consistent result. I mean, because he's finished in second, he now actually overtakes Leclerc in the driver's standings. He's now currently in second. So that is very nice for a driver that, you know, just at the start of last year was in a position where McLaren was not anywhere in the conversation for something like this.
No, I completely agree. There's a lot of reason for optimism for Mercedes. They've been doing quite well for the past two races. And yeah, Hamilton, I mean, you could see he was very upbeat, but also Russell. I mean, in the end, besides the great move that he had in the first lap, we also saw that he was able to fend off Leclerc at the end of the race, which actually, like, five laps before the end, I wasn't expecting him to do that. I thought that Leclerc would get into DRS range earlier than he did. He only did in the penultimate lap, and And in that lap, he wasn't able to overtake Russell on the straight, and then the straight is not long enough to do it in the last lap when you cross the finish line. I know two people who were very happy that Leclerc didn't overtake Russell, because that would have costed both me and David quite a few points in forecast. So good result for Russell. I was definitely cheering that on, and. But I agree, Sam. Definitely a lot of reason for optimism for Mercedes as well as for Alpine, like we mentioned. I guess a little bit less optimism for Perez, even with his three-place grip penalty. I think he. I don't know how to put it, but he was also on an alternative strategy, of course. Him and Tsunoda were the only two drivers on a three-stop strategy, which actually leads me to one of the questions I've written down to ask you guys. And actually, with saying that, you can already deduct the answer. But everybody finished the race, all the 20 drivers, and I just put out the strategies. How many pit stops did we see in total for the whole race?
Like in total, like summing up all of them.
That is a good question.
Can I go with, if we had 18 drivers that did it twice, then we had 36 and two drivers, then it's 42, right?
How'd you get to 18 drivers?
Because 20 drivers finished the race, right, and 18 stopped twice. Only being Yuki. Only being Yuki and Sergio, the ones that stopped three times, which wasn't the best strategy. And then we got 42 total, right?
Well, I don't need to ask the question to Sam then, because you already
I'm really sorry.
I thought that was actually very good.
I was going to do the math 20 down. Times 2 to get to 40, and then the two additional stops from both drivers.
That's exactly what I was doing.
But I guess in Chile they do math differently, but you get to the same answer.
And I didn't need any paper. I didn't write it down. Just my mind.
That's good. That's good.
Impressive.
Something like to sum up what you were saying before? Like, especially with Sam, when she said that the overtakes and not the fighting that Hamilton took, and we can all agree that he fought his way into P3, into the podium. That was an amazing character racing from Lewis Hamilton. You know, we can see it on the genius that he is on the racetrack. And also that we will, maybe in the next two races, we will see a head-to-head battle between Norris and Verstappen. I want to see it as a fan, of course, but for the, I think that is going to be very exciting, these next two races. And maybe the Austria track will favor McLaren in this regard.
Well, that's going to be interesting.
Well, looking ahead to even Silverstone, I feel like Silverstone is a great track where you may see that type of a battle between Max and Lando. So wouldn't that be something going around turn one in Silverstone? We've seen a few battles on that turn.
Also, we hope that nothing goes wrong there.
Of course not, no.
So that brings us to a second part of our podcast, where we go over some of the forecast F1 scores. And some of you who have joined our new WhatsApp chat groups might have already picked up on some of those results. It's one of the places that you can join if you want to see a little bit of additional stats and data on the game, and also discuss it with your fellow players. So feel free to join us and discuss. Discuss your own results with others, but let's have a little bit of a look at. Actually, we had 851 people playing the game this weekend, and what I want to know from the two of you is, how many people do you think had this podium predicted with Verstappen, Norris, and Hamilton in that exact order, David?
In the exact same order with Verstappen, Norris, I'm gonna go with 150. I don't know why.
Seb.
Okay. I'm going to go low. I'm going to say 3.
Whoa. Let's just say the truth is somewhat in the middle and somewhat closer to what Sam is saying, but it's pretty much in the middle. There was 59 people actually who had that.
Wow.
I think a lot of people had the confidence in Hamilton after some good practice sessions, but of course also not putting him on P1, although I'm sure some people did. But yeah, there were 59 people who went with this exact podium. We had a average score of 51.7 points, which is quite high. Actually, let me see how that ranks with previous average scores in the game this season. Well, only, to be fair, Japan had an higher average score, and well, China, but that was a sprint race. So that's, yeah, 51.7. That's quite high. The lowest score that we had was 5.5 points. Let's look at our podium of this weekend. And let's start with P3. And that was a player from Serbia, Andrej Šari, who scored 93 points. And it's actually the second time that he finishes on the podium. He was also third for the Miami Grand Prix this year. Then on P2, we have with 94 points from Italy, Matteo Poletti, the founder of Polmed Racing. If you're not following him yet, then I strongly suggest you do, if you want to have a good laugh throughout the race weekends. And then on P1, very interesting. I think this is the first time that actually ever happens that the person who's ranked first in the standings wins a race weekend. Sometimes, of course, somebody wins the race weekend and then moves up in the standings and is on P1, but it never happened, I think, that the person was already ranked first. So Rosario Finzi from France scored 100 points, meaning that he was very close to a perfect score. Perfect score being 102 points. He predicted, and I'm just going to go down the list now, he went with P1 Verstappen, P2 Norris, P3 Hamilton, P4 Russell, P5 Leclerc, P6 Sainz, P7 Piastri, P8 Perez, and then he messed up with going for Alonso on P9, but he had Gasly on P10, so he still scores 1 point because Gasly finished 9th, and he also scored the point for fastest lap because he had Norris there. So I would say that's pretty impressive, guys.
I mean, it's amazing. He was just 2 points off having the perfect score, even predicting the fastest lap. And I generally give the fastest lap to someone that is not fighting on top, except if it's Verstappen and we see that he's going to dominate. But I generally give Russell, or maybe one of the Ferraris, the fastest lap, but pretty impressive from her.
Yeah, very impressive. Actually, with that score, he makes it to P2 in the high scores worldwide, right behind Ana Cardenas from Mexico, who scored that perfect score in Japan, 102 points. But he is ranked first now in the high scores for Europe. Actually, all three people on the podium this weekend are now in the worldwide high scores, with Matteo moving into P11 and Andre moving into P17. And looking at the country rankings, another thing that you can follow in the WhatsApp chat groups, but in the top 10, well, actually the Dominican Republic now drops outside of the top 10 and is being replaced by Lebanon, and Colombia moves into the top 25 at the expense of Hungary. And a little bit further on, you can also see more of these country scores on the Instagram page. And I think that brings us to our scores. I think
please
Sam,
please don't.
Sorry, yeah, and that's why I wanted to start with Sam, and we'll end with you, David. although I admire you went with something alternative. Let's just put it that way. Sam, do you remember what your podium was?
I do. It was Verstappen, Norris, and Leclerc. Verstappen, Norris, and Sainz.
That's right. I actually also put Sainz ahead of Leclerc. We both did. Actually, we all did, all three of us. Sam, you scored, well, of course, with Verstappen, Norris, you scored the first 25 and 18 points. You actually, which I thought was quite impressive, you had Pires in the right spot. You put him in PA, which is where he finished. So I thought that that was good.
Nice.
You scored 56.4 points, which means you finished P327 out of the 851 people that played. Myself, I scored only 1.1 point more than you did. I scored 57.5. I went with Verstappen, Norris, Piastri. So got those points for Verstappen and Norris, but I also had Leclerc in the right spot. Yeah, both of us were dropping in the rankings. You dropped from P85 to P87, and I'm dropping from P17 to P25, and I finished P288 this weekend. David, do you even want to know where you finished?
People know what I hear, Edwin. I'm P813.
Yeah. You're right.
Not good. I want to say that this is my worst result.
what was the podium that you went with?
You know what I hear. Come on. I gave the win to Piastri, P2 Sainz, and P3 Max Verstappen.
Yeah, that's right. You also had Leclerc on the right spot.
That's
you credits for that. Yeah.
Well, it came in a dream, maybe. I don't know. That was the only thing that I got right this weekend.
25.8 points you scored, and you're moving down from P351 to P402. But again, I admire going for alternative strategies. That should be that will be rewarded at some point, hopefully. So
there was some reasoning behind. I'm sorry, Anton, to interrupt. There was some reasoning behind putting Piastri in P1. I want to say that I saw early that this was going to be a good weekend for McLaren, and I said, This is Piastri's weekend, you know, but well, it didn't go that way.
Yeah, it would have been. I wouldn't be surprised if he does get a race win in not too long. I mean, if you look at how quick the McLarens are, it's bound to happen at some point. So I admire you going with that prediction. And let's just say that let's hope that when it does happen, you you win the weekend if you do continue to go for Piastri wins. I skipped the part where we would look at the current rankings, but the reason for that is because there's no changes in the top three. There's a lot of changes behind it, but the top three is still Rosario Finzi, who obviously won this weekend. With that, he now actually has a 38-point lead. I don't think that has happened very often in Forecast F1. So a 38-point lead to P2, Annelie Boehmer from the Netherlands, and then on P3 is still Robin Kessler from Germany. So an unchanged top three. But of course, we're going to have more points to be scored in the next race in Austria, and it's going to be blind predictions because it's going to be a sprint race. So so things might change there. But before we look ahead, let's just go.
I will make my predictions live. I will make my prediction for Austria right now. that's how frustrated I am.
You're going to make your predictions for Austria now?
Now, okay. Right now. Live on the show.
All right. Well, I don't think we've ever had somebody make them live on the show.
No, I don't think so either. Let's go for it. I want to hear your reasoning, and I want to hear what you're putting.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go. Well, I've told you before, but I'm not predicting any more Verstappen wins, just to make it interesting. I know that might hurt my results, but I won't make it. Yeah, it will. don't say might, it will. I'm going to put Norris as the winner, and Verstappen as second, and third, I'm going to go with... it might be Piastri. I'm going to trust Piastri in this one. P4, P5, I'm going to go with Hamilton, and then Leclerc, and then Russell, and then Sainz. Not much reasoning between that, but I guess that those are the cars that might be competing. And P8, we're only talking about sprint race here. And for P8, I'm going to go with Perez. Okay, that's the highest that I'm gonna rank him. And for the race, I'm gonna go with a Norris win.
So Norris gonna have a good weekend in Austria, I hear.
Yeah, Yeah, he's gonna have a great weekend. They're gonna find the car pretty well. And I'm gonna put Norris, Verstappen, and then Hamilton. Maybe we get like the same guys on the podium, but shuffle. And I won't tell you anymore. For the race, I won't tell you anymore because that's gonna give me more points. And of course, I don't wanna give anyone too much of an advice. You know, I'm a really good at predicting. You can see it from my score this week. And yeah, Norris, Verstappen, Hamilton, my podium for next week, and in the feeder race and in the sprint race, Norris, Verstappen, and Piastri.
Okay, all right, I like it. I'm McLaren strong.
I'm starting to understand why your race number is 395, which means that's where you finished last year.
But I have some hope, man. I have some hope, and I'm keeping Verstappen in P2, so he can give me at least some points.
Love it.
He's gonna be on the podium.
I'll say this: if you are right, if you are close to right, and you pick the podium correctly, then that 300 position is going to elevate and you're going to be in a nice spot. So never know.
Three,
I mean,
395 was his finishing position for last year. He's currently on 402. Year. So it still takes a bit to get into the 300.
Don't say it too loud, man.
It's all right. We need people like you in the game, honestly, that go for alternative strategies. If everybody was doing the same as me and Sam, who usually, I mean, we always end up picking more or less the same. And I think it's good we have people who think in different ways. So let's see if that also translates to different predictions for the quiz, which we're going to play. So for those not regularly listening, we're going to have Sam and David now guess how many people out of 851 predicted each finishing position correct. So we're going to go down the ranking. We're going to start with Verstappen. And I'm going to ask Sam, how many people do you think out of 851 predicted that Verstappen would win this race?
I am going to go with 672.
Okay. Okay. That looks some inside information. 672. I'm going to go with 550.
Okay.
So Anton? Guys are really... this is it. No, I had to actually look at it for just a brief moment because, Sam, you are 62 places away from the correct answer. Oh. And David is 60 places away from the good answer.
Wow.
It's right in the middle. It was 610. So this one goes to David, but it was very close.
Hardcore fans know that this is my game. Not predicting the races. This is my game. You know I'm 2-0.
Yeah, actually, you won when you played against me too. You're right. A couple of races ago. So
And against Sam last year.
And I
don't remind me.
I usually beat Sam, so...
You. I'm sorry. Did you say you usually beat me? Look at this, eh? Yeah, let me.
Last year. Wait. Actually, you two played against one another last year.
No.
That's right.
That's right. I thought Anton made a little subtle comment that he normally beats me, which I'm not going to argue. But let's not forget last weekend.
Well, it's nine against one, Sam. It's nine against. It's nine against one.
No, of course he's got the numbers.
No, it's actually eight against one. Sorry. I stand corrected.
I did do well last weekend. Maybe I'm coming back. I mean, I never...
All right. Then let's move to Norris on P2.
Okay, Norris on P2. I guess it's... David, I think it's
actually,
your go.
Actually, no, wait. It's David who needs to go first, right? Because Sam, you went with Verstappen.
I'm with the pairs, you're with the odds. Okay. Norris in P2, I'm going to say 500 people.
Okay, I'm going to go lower than that. I'm going to say 401.
All right, that means this one does go to Sam, so you're one against one because it was only 285 people that went with Norris on P2.
Okay.
Which brings us to Hamilton.
Hamilton, I'm going to go with 80, you know what? I'm going to say 100.
Okay, I'm gonna go with 150.
Well, David, you got to keep up because this point goes to Sam. It was only there was 116 people.
Ooh.
So Sam's 100 is closer.
Okay.
Bringing us to Russell, the other Mercedes, on P4.
Okay.
David.
Georgie boy, 100 people.
All right. I'm going to go above that. I'm going to say 101.
Nice. That's a good tactical move, Sam. It was 103. Both of you were very close.
Oh, that was close.
So it's 3-1 now, moving to the two Ferraris. And it was Leclerc who finished ahead of Sainz, which we all had in the reverse order. But Sam, how many people had Leclerc on P5?
I'm going to go with 89.
Okay. I should go with two, just me and Anton. But I'm going to go with 100.
Well, that's still the right way up because it was 165, so quite a few, which means it's David's point. And that means it's 2-3 in favor of Sam, moving to Sainz on P6.
I go first, all right?
I'm going to go... Oh, yeah, it's your go.
Yeah, it's David
first.
Yeah,
Sainz in P6. I guess not many people had him in P6. I'm going to go with 50.
I'm going to go above that and say 51.
We need to stop doing this, Sam. Come on. come on. It's a friendly game. Come on.
Yeah. Okay, but it's a good move because it was 91 people. So this one's Sam's point too.
All right. Then we move along.
I was going to say Perez, but it was Piastri who finished ahead of Perez on P7. Sam?
I am going to say 97.
97 people had Piastri on P7. Okay, then I'm going to go with 40. 40.
Ooh, Sam's extending her lead to 5-2 because it was 150 people who had Piastri on P7.
Okay.
5-2. David, you can still win it. We have 3 positions left plus fastest lap. So there's still hope. We move to Perez on P8.
Okay, Perez on P8. I know many people that don't trust him no more. Someone that trusts him a lot. And I'm going to go with 50. Just 50.
Okay. I am going to go with 60.
Okay, well, to be honest, I was also making my list prior to... because I thought I was going to play this game against Sam. So prior to knowing the answer. And I'll just chip in that I would have gone even lower. I had written down 35. But I would have gotten it horribly wrong. And we all did. Amazingly, there was 188 people that went with Perez on P8.
Wow.
Sam, you were one of them.
I was. But that's surprising. Okay.
Means it's 6-2, David. So I guess...
it's just a game. Let's just
let's just round it off and let's go together. Yeah, it is. This is just a game, you know. Like the predictions for Austria are more important. I agree. P8 Gasly.
It's my go,
David.
I know it's P9 for Gasly. It's Sam's go.
Oh,
you're right. It's Sam's go.
Okay, I'm going to go with 42.
Okay, I'm gonna go with just 10.
It's interesting to also have a look back at Canada, actually, because like I was saying earlier in the podcast, it was also a Gasly P9 finish there and also an Ocon P10. And back then, it was 21 people who had Gasly on P9. So now, Sam, you're going with 42 and David, you're going with 10. You would expect the truth to be somewhere in the middle. But it seems like after Canada, a lot of people thought that maybe the Alpines would score points. There were 78 people who had Gasly on P9.
Wow, okay. Nice confidence there for Alpine.
Predictions are kicking my butt this weekend, man.
So,
this is not my weekend at all, come on.
Yeah, well, trust me, Trust me, David, I would have gotten this wrong too. But I'm bringing this up because that brings us to Ocon on P10. So the question is that going to happen with them as well? Shall I mention how many people got Ocon on P10 last time in Canada, what the correct answer was?
Well, please.
So out of 887 people last time in Canada, there were 15 people who went with Ocon on P10. How many people had him on P10 this time around, David?
I'm going to go low again. I'm going to go with 15 too, also.
I'm going to stick to 60.
Very close to the right answer, Sam. It was 57 people.
Oh, come on.
All right.
Yeah, you don't know what's happening yourself either.
I'm letting it play out at this point. I already know the result, but I am being humble.
But
let's go to fastest lap. We have one more, Anton.
Let's go to fastest lap. Yeah, we have Norris. We have Norris on fastest lap. How many people went with Norris for that fastest lap? Sam, it's your go.
I'm actually going to go low here. I'm going to say 27.
I'm going to go with 30.
It's incredible. You said 27, Sam, and you're saying 30, Dave.
30, yeah.
I even want to double check this, but it's really true. It's 162 people that went with the fastest.
I know. As soon
Norris.
As I said 27, I was like, ah, I should have gone higher. That would make more sense.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you still outscored David with 8-3. So all credit to you.
I'll take this win home, and maybe next year when we can record another podcast. This time in Germany, I mean Spa.
It was a big car kind of weekend for me, you know. This is kind of an homage to my team right there. This was my big car weekend.
We already ended the podcast this season once with the national anthem from Chile, and also once with the national anthem from Canada. I suppose it's time to play the Canadian anthem again. You know, it might this Canadian domination might start to bore fans at some point.
Well, let's not jinx it. Let's not jinx it. I mean, we have a Canadian on the grid, and I mean, I'm not gonna. Well, I wish his results were a little bit better than what we see. So
you had two up to last year. You know, up to the year before last, you know, and they didn't go very well. So
and there's recently, okay. Let's. I mean, we already mentioned Austria, and we already mentioned that it is a sprint race. So the whole format for the weekend is a little bit different. Again, like I said, blind predictions. You got to predict before the start of FP1. So that means you're not going to see any practice sessions, which, it brings a different dynamic to the game. What are you guys looking forward to on the Austrian weekend, particularly Sam and David?
I think I'm looking forward to it being a sprint weekend. And Austria is, I really do love that track. I love the location as well, and so I'm looking forward to it. It's nice to also have a back-to-back weekend, to be honest. Having two and then technically three weekends in a row of Formula One is not a bad thing.
Great. I'm a big fan of the track. I love the Red Bull Ring. It's an amazing track, and I know that I've said in the past that I don't really like the sprint format, but if there's a track that fits the sprint format, I guess, is this one. So I guess that we all as a fans are gonna enjoy this weekend. And yeah, looking forward for the race. I'm looking forward for as we said before, the fights between McLaren and Verstappen. Just him maybe. And I'm looking forward for a Lando win, as I told you before my predictions.
And David, talking about your predictions, you didn't want to share the rest of them for the race, but where did you put Tsunoda?
Well, of course, inside the top 10. I'm not going to tell you the exact spot, but of course he's going to come back.
All right. Well, actually, I'm looking forward to that because, to be honest, it would. And now that well, it's not. It's a bit unfortunate for Aston Martin to not really be the fifth team anymore. But at least it opens up. Some battles for those last finishing or those last point finishing positions, because I guess there's now four main teams. But then, that gives a little bit of battling room for the other teams to still score points. So I guess that's also one of the interesting factors for predicting for Austria. Is I mean, not for the sprint, I suppose. I mean, there we have eight positions, but then I don't know. I'm starting to think, who am I going to put in my top 10 besides the four main teams? And I'm already struggling a little bit. And I like those kind of struggles. So definitely looking forward to the weekend as well.
I'd like to point out that maybe we get some surprise shuffling in the top 10, maybe some incident, maybe some yellow flags, as the different kind of track that we're having. So yeah, it could be way more exciting.
And we also always get a lot of, I think Austria is typically a track where people go off limits, especially in the last corner. We usually see a lot of track limits on the qualifying session, also during the race. So let's see how that plays into the whole weekend. I think that we now have a more digital, more like an AI way of monitoring this, and I'm going to be looking forward to see the decisions being made quicker. Although in the end, I do think most important is that the decisions are made correctly rather than quick. But it would be good if it would be a combination of the two. So let's see if that's something that's going to be playing a big role in this Austrian weekend.
Well, thank you, David, once again for being on the podcast. It is a pleasure to have you on here and to also hear your insight as well. I would say it's also enjoyable to play against you, because I won this time. Woohoo! So definitely fun. And I look forward to, now that I know what your predictions are, to seeing how that unfolds this weekend.
Yeah, I'm gonna say thank you guys for having me again. It's always amazing to be with you and compete against you, even though this wasn't my weekend, you know. But yeah, I'm not gonna make any change to my predictions. You know, Anton can take note of that. And yeah, I'm expecting for a great race, a great weekend, and just thankful to again for being on this show.
Well, then I guess the only thing that leaves us to say is, Sam, please introduce the Canadian national anthem.
Hasn't been heard in a while in F1.
Without further ado.
Great chance.
I actually see the rest of your prediction now, David. Now I see Tsunoda. Oh, Tsunoda dropped the place. He was P8 last time. Now he's P9, I see.
Oh, he's P9? Hey, well, you know. I don't think that's a bad choice.
Well, No, because he was like, what did he finish this
19.
Race? He was like P17?
P19. Even Albon finished ahead of him.
Even worse. Oh, come on. You don't need to kick me on the ground, Anton. That's unnecessary. But yeah. I guess that they're going to work extra hard on the scene this weekend, during the week, and we'll see him higher in Austria.